I wonder. One of you three.
I'm glad to see someone looking so comfortable back there.
We had three representatives from the Attorney General's office sitting there in the back row, and I just wanted to give them an opportunity to come forward before we call the next case.
They were probably rock, paper, scissoring who's going up there.
The next matter is State versus Gutierrez. Counsel, whenever you're ready, State versus Gutierrez.
May it please the court, I'm Gerard Piglow representing the appellant, Ivan Gutierrez. I would note, Your Honor, that since I was not trial counsel, most of the issues in this particular case are ineffective assistance of counsel. I won't go through with the court the Strickland standards. I think the court understands that. I would note very, very importantly, which is something the court has to consider in this particular case, and it's extremely important. This is a case of credibility. It's a question of who the jury believed with regard to the witnesses. There were any number of witnesses testifying to any number of things. So anything that goes to credibility is important. Now, if I may, in my brief I outlined, I think, six issues in ineffective assistance of counsel. The first one is an improper impeachment. Both Mr. Salpas and Mr. Melgard were asked an improper question. I won't repeat it here. I think it's clear in the record what it was, about some other witness's credibility. Trial counsel did not object at all. The question as it was put was clearly objectionable. I think the state concedes in its brief that that was malpractice or deficient practice. The question becomes whether it's prejudice. And as I mentioned before, Your Honors, what's important in this particular case is the credibility of witnesses. So where one witness is allowed to comment upon the credibility of any other witnesses, that goes to the particular issue and the merits of this particular case because we're talking about credibility. That's important. And so it is prejudicial. In addition, in my brief, I outlined the elements concerning a request for a defense of property instruction. It's more fact-specific, and I do cite to the record where particular evidence came in substantiating a need for a defense of property instruction. Trial counsel did not request a defense of property instruction. It certainly is an exculpatory instruction. Could have been used in argument in front of the jury to exculpate Mr. Gutierrez or at least to justify his actions in front of the jury, and consequently a not guilty verdict could have resulted from that.
Can we talk about that for just a few minutes?
Sure.
I presume you're referring to the allegation that the victim charged up towards the porch and Mr. Gutierrez stabbed him with a knife.
Correct.
Is that deadly force?
Well, I'm going to answer that question by saying yes, it is deadly force. Okay, stabbing is deadly force. The question is, and it's a question of fact, whether it was needed under the circumstances, Your Honor. And I think deadly force can be used in defense of property under the circumstances. And you have in front of you the use of the arm bar, which was a very, very serious, all right, application of force to Mr. Gutierrez. All right, so he may have thought, in order to defend my property, I have to respond with deadly force. It was also a self-defense instruction, which was also given as well. But this is kind of independent and distinct from the self-defense instruction, which is the defense of property.
But do you think that the statute indicates that deadly force is appropriate when there is not...
The display of deadly force is appropriate. If you look at my brief, I say that Mr. Gutierrez says that Mr. Salpas lunged at him. All right, and that's how the knife got into the back. Now, that's not maybe an application of deadly force. That's Mr. Salpas lunging at him. So you may have a causation question there.
Well, see, I tried to think about that.
Yeah.
The man is coming at him.
He's holding the knife like this.
And so he's coming this way.
Yeah. I just did it like that. So I think Mr. Gutierrez testified it was kind of like a tackle.
Right.
And so that the tackle would bend the back forward, and the knife then would have struck the back of Mr. Salpas. Again, the question
it's
for
question
the jury.
Fact, right?
Yeah,
right.
Question for the jury. No question about it. And the jury was not instructed on that. Again, inefficient, or I'm sorry, ineffective assistance of counsel. The next issue is concerning what Mr. Melgar testified to. He stated that he surmised that Mr. Gutierrez realized that he had done something wrong, which, again, wasn't objected to. And I discuss it in my brief. It had no relevance whatsoever. It was just kind of like an opinion. I don't think Mr. Melgar has any expertise in determining whether Mr. Gutierrez knew he had done something wrong or not. The state, in the evidence presented at trial, goes out of its way to present this evidence about hatred of Mexicans by Mr. Gutierrez. And you see, I think, page after page about Mr. Gutierrez's hatred of Mexicans. Even Mr. Gutierrez took the stand and tried to rebut this evidence that came in. The evidence is clearly irrelevant to the issues at trial. None of the victims were Mexican. Mrs. Gutierrez wasn't Mexican. Mr. Salpas wasn't Mexican. Mr. Brooks wasn't Mexican. Mr. Melgar wasn't Mexican at all. Why the state presented this evidence remains a question and a mystery to me. Ostensibly, it was presented to impeach Mrs. Gutierrez in her statement, but it's impeachment on a collateral matter. Why this evidence came in and the state spent so much time on it remains a mystery to me, other than its character evidence. And in my brief, I expressed the opinion that it is character evidence. It was designed evidence to show that somehow Mr. Gutierrez is an evil person, an aggressive person, a mean person, and willing to attack anybody at a whim.
Well, I didn't understand his wife's statement in answer to the question. And my question remains, why would he care that the people there were Mexican? And her answer was, he didn't care they were Mexican. So, I mean, you could read that, I suppose, two different ways. One way that he was upset that they were Mexican, and the other that he really didn't care that all they were Mexican. So I don't understand the issue, I guess.
Yeah, and it's a question of credibility, really. Did the jury believe Mrs. Gutierrez, or did they believe Mr. Salvis and his group? The next statement is, Mr. Brooks testified to what Ashley Jewell said when supposedly, according to Mr. Brooks, Alicia's Jewell or Alicia Gutierrez's hair was grabbed. Clearly hearsay, wasn't objected to. I'm not sure what the purpose to all that was, but nevertheless, it wasn't objected to and it came in.
Are some of these matters, though, that this record won't help us determine?
Yeah.
Potentially trial strategy or...
Yeah, it's a little hard to determine what the trial strategy was just looking at the record because there was a lot of unobjected evidence that came in, as I'm mentioning now. So I don't know the answer to that, but...
How do we know the answer to
that?
Well,
no, but it's important, Your Honor, and here's the importance. It's credibility. It's a question of credibility. The primary issue in this case is who did the jury believe? Okay, anything that goes to credibility... Anything that goes to some sort of evidence to suggest somebody was lying, all right, and it's not proper, again, results in maybe perhaps ineffective assistance counsel and prejudice as well. I would note there was also Mr. Brooks testified as to why he went into the house, and he says he went into the house because he was scared for Ashley Jewell, and he was also scared for Mr. Gutierrez's kids, which I didn't understand at all. But that, again, wasn't objected to. Again, it kind of went to character that Mr. Gutierrez was such an evil person that he was going to attack his own kids because these three guys showed up at, 2 o'clock in the morning, were giving him a problem. I didn't understand that. It was not objected to. One of the issues that I also raised is the question of the blood test results, Your Honor. And the record is confusing, but I specified in my reply brief there was a question asked. There was an objection, and then I think Judge Luther sustained the objection. Then he went into this voir dire of the witness, and then somehow, in some way, the trial proceeded. Now, I think that's enough for the court to review specifically the objection. As I made in the argument I made in my brief, there was evidence that there was alcohol in Mr. Salpas' blood. And the only purpose to the question that was asked is to quantify the amount of alcohol in the blood. Now, you don't find that in the record, what the amount is. But even if it was 0.001 or it was .238. That's for the jury to determine whether to believe Mr. Salvas. All right? And it's a credibility issue. And again, as I mentioned, this case comes down to credibility. With that, I'll reserve the remaining time, which is about 30 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Good afternoon.
First Love, on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska, I'm going to address the last issue. No relevance was shown back to why the victim's blood alcohol content was relevant or admissible at trial. There's nothing to show the relevance of it. Counsel argues that his blood alcohol content goes to credibility. That's nonsense. That's just complete nonsense. That doesn't make it relevant. It's not probative of
anything.
Doesn't
it depend on what the results of the blood tests were?
Pardon me?
Doesn't it depend on what the results
were? No, it doesn't. It's not relevant.
If it showed that it was 0.43 as opposed to 0.1 or 0.01, you don't think that
would
make a difference?
And what would that prove?
Well, I would think that there...
He was drunk or not drunk.
Well, but I think that most of us who have seen people who are intoxicated know that they have more problems remembering what's going on than people who don't.
So we're going to infer that it's relevant because it goes to memory?
Goes to credibility.
Your Honor,
his recitation
of
the event.
Pardon me?
His recitation of the event.
What happened?
Okay, it's a recitation of the event. How does it alter the outcome in any way? What is it probative of?
Then why did they object?
Pardon me?
Then why was there an objection if it really...
And that's my point. The objection, whatever it was, is not of record. That's the problem. It is not of record. But I'm going to assume that you've got to make a threshold showing of relevance. What is the relevance? It doesn't go to credibility. It doesn't determine honesty or dishonesty. Period. So I just don't think it's relevant, and it wasn't established. How could there be error? I want to address the ineffective assistance counsel claims in a global sense. This court's or the court's decision in Philholm basically establishes the idea that an appellant on direct appeal only has to make allegations of deficient performance, but doesn't have to show prejudice. Okay. Now, when I approach this, I always try and approach it, well, you know, can I see how, would this have changed the outcome of trial is the basic fundamental question, had that been objected to, or the performance was deficient. In other words, was there prejudice? Okay, is there anything that would lead me to that conclusion? I tried to address in brief those six instances where I didn't see how you're going to show prejudice, i.e. That the outcome of a case would have been different. As far as Alicia Gutierrez, if anyone was proven a bald-faced liar, it was her. She changed her story, obviously, to protect her husband. He was inconsistent on every fact. Every fact she told the police officer, and I pointed that out in brief. So, in terms of credibility, hers was destroyed long before any of this stuff happened. She was done. And I think I frankly don't think that you can reach the majority of the ineffective claims on direct appeal simply because the record doesn't reflect the reasoning or the strategy of counsel. Now, that can change during the course of the trial in the sense that I think Alicia was completely destroyed in terms of her credibility at trial. That having occurred, what did it change? Her testimony discounted, would the outcome have been different had Melgar not testified to the fact that if somebody said X, that would not be true? In other words, kicking, I think, Ivan in the face was one of the questions he was asked. Would that have changed the outcome? Not likely.
Were you able to ascertain from the record why the state opted to pursue this he hates Mexican line of questioning?
The only thing that I can think of is that if you accept the statement as true, it could be part of the anger or motive of Mr. Gutierrez, the appellant in this case, for attack, if he believed it, for attacking Nathan when he was by the truck. The idea that, well, again, Alicia's testimony destroyed the idea that Nathan charged was not only refuted by Alicia's own statement with a police officer, but every other witness in the matter. How any trier of fact would give a occurrence given the opinion. But nonetheless, I don't think you reach the ineffective assistance of counsel claims on direct appeal because you don't know the fundamental reason of counsel. And that's the point. So I don't think you can, on some of them, I think you can might be able to get there and say, even if you want to call this deficient performance, how are you going to show the outcome would have been different? Not likely. Not likely in line of the physical evidence and all of the other testimony, notwithstanding Alicia's testimony. Not likely to show that. But nonetheless, you can't say it for sure. You don't know. I just don't think the record supports it. And I think that if you concede the idea that some kind of deficient performance was established, you certainly haven't established prejudice in the outcome. Any of the claims. So I would leave it with the court at that.
Could we talk about the jury instruction that was not given concerning the defense of property?
Right. I believe I stated in brief there was two major reasons for not giving the defense of property instruction. That requires that a person be a trespasser to begin with, and Nathan was not a trespasser. He was an invitee by Alicia and Mr. Brooks. In other words, they called Mr. Brooks, if memory serves, to come over and pick them up. Nathan was with Mr. Brooks. He was part of that parade over to Mr. Gutierrez's house. So he's an invitee on the property. That's one. And two, stabbing someone while, if you believe, while they were exiting, trying to leave the property, is not a defense of property. Alicia, again, I'm sorry, that testimony is nonsense.
I understood that.
And that, I don't, in other words, it doesn't amount to a scintilla to warrant that instruction.
I understood that the testimony was that Gutierrez was on the porch and the victim came towards him as if he was going into the property.
That is Alicia's version.
Well, there's evidence for that version. So the question is whether or not he was entitled to a jury instruction for the jury to decide whether or not to believe that up.
If you say that if you accept that as a scintilla of evidence, he was not a trespasser.
Right.
That's the other part that is required by the statute in order to obtain the instruction. He was an invitee.
Does it matter that he wasn't invited by the defendant?
I don't think so, because Alicia was, and I can't think of the other gentleman's name. They went out of the house. Alicia and the other person went out of the house and decided to leave because Ivan was angry and upset with him that they were having this party after he had gone to bed and woke up and so on and so forth. He was upset about that. So they decided to go outside and call cousin, but they called, I think, Mr. Brooks. He came over to the house, and with him where it was the victim, in this case Nathan, and then the other one, Melgard, how you pronounce it, those two came over as well. So I don't think there's nothing to invent anybody who entered the property that night that they were trespassing. There's nobody saying they trespassed.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
How much time does the appellant have left? You're pretty close.
If I just briefly will respond, it is relevant. I think the court is very familiar with DWI laws and that intoxication or a level of intoxication does alter the mind. That's why you can't drive while you're supposedly intoxicated. And it does relate to your ability to remember what was going on as well as to process information. And that certainly goes to the weight and credibility of a particular witness. By the way, none of them were invitees. I expressed that and outlined in my brief, my reply brief, as to why none of the people there were invitees. With that, I will stop. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You. Appreciate you coming in. And excuse, matters deemed submitted.
Thank you.
That completes this session of the Court of Appeals. Those of you from the Attorney General's office.